stage and on the air, performance number 317. I am Lisa Sheps. I am joined by my stalwart and stealthy co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live as we do at koop.org. Remember, during the pandemic, we are homegrown and pre-recorded. Stick with us.
Step right up, the show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
One little year from the girl to the maid, from the maid to the witch and the whore. One little year from a virgin to savior of France to a toss on the floor.
It is Wednesday.
Why do they make it so
March 17th, 2021. On the show today, we have Austin Shakespeare talking about Henry IV, both parts 1 and part 2. And we have Georgetown Palace Theater talking about Almost Maine. And it is St. Patrick's Day. Stick with us after this song.
If somebody wants to say thanks, I can think of a few better ways.
Okay. I apologize to any Irish people out there for my introduction.
As an Irish person, I appreciated that so much. I am like, I'm crying. You're making my glasses fog.
There is a reason why I don't act anymore, and that's it. Well, it is St. Patrick's Day today, and we're turning the Austin River green.
Wouldn't that kind of be cool if we did that? We don't. It's not in our heritage, but I mean, wouldn't it be cool?
We're not cool enough for that. But the song we just played was called One Little Year from the big hit Good Time Charlie, starring one Anne Rankin. And even though it doesn't say One Little Year all that much in the lyrics, that's the title. So, and I'm doing that because it's been a year of COVID, and that's what a lot of the stuff we're going to talk about is today. It's about the last year.
Crazy year.
It was a crazy year. So just let's start in the meta. Tell me about your year. What is this past COVID year meant to you?
It sucks. Took the Olympics away from me. But that's not even my main concern, to be honest with you. That's the least of my concerns.
It did take the Olympics away, but it's going to give it back to you.
No, I'm not going to get the experience back ever. I'm going to get my money back, but I'm not going to get the experience.
You're not going this summer?
The Japanese don't want tourists, visitors from other countries.
Oh, I did not know that.
What has been the worst for me? I have missed this past year of not having live entertainment, not having human contact with friends and my family. The only reason I decided to move back to Texas was because it was only a 2-hour flight and it was short. And when you take that away, I'm too far from my family. I'm not gonna be able to do this much longer not seeing my family.
Well, I am confident that you only have to, I'm with President Biden. July 4th is the day,
Looking far away, Lisa.
It's still pretty far away. Well,
it that long
doesn't sound far away to me anymore because this has been this past year, and for me, it's been more bitter than sweet. But there were some highlights for me. In that, in Austin, the theater community has come together more than it ever has before. And we're talking to one another and we're sharing best practices, to steal a term from corporate America, with each other. And I think it's opened up a spirit of camaraderie in the community here in Austin, and a spirit of... What I've been trying to say for years is that we're not in competition with each other.
No, so, I've been saying that for years. One succeed, we all succeed. Yeah.
So that's the good thing. And of course I miss sitting shoulder to shoulder with people inside of a theater, and I miss that relationship that performers have with an audience. And I'm as a director, I miss standing in the back of the house and watching people enjoy the fruits of our labors at Ground Floor Theater. I miss being in the studio with you and our guests.
You've and been the highlight of this whole pandemic. Every week with you on the Zoom.
That's
people
sweet.
Can't
Thank
see
you.
It, but I have a really big smile in the screen right now because it just really has been everything.
That is sweet. Well, there is a couple of articles talking. Well, there's a whole bunch of stuff nationally. And I do want to say, and I don't know whether you saw the video with Rob McClure. And he plays a conductor cam, and it's stage manager. It's the stage manager's call. And the stage manager, she's talking to all the different departments, and they have answers from real department people from different shows. And then Rob McClure comes on, and it's him being the conductor of some show, some unnamed show, when the show's about to start. And I won't spoil it. It's just, it ends very poignantly and lovingly. And there will be a link at offstageonair.com I call it Rob McClure stage manager call conductor cam. And it's really a nice thing to see. So I think there is a feeling of a little optimism now based on if we can all behave ourselves and stay vigilant, that we might, you know, we might see Broadway come back in the early to late fall, and we can see ourselves coming back to smaller theaters before that. So there are some great articles in the New York Times that I just want to talk about. First of all, did you see the, it was called "Where is Hollywood When Broadway Needs It?" From Laura Collins Hughes. Did you see that article?
And about 500 people and went, I've been saying this for almost a year now. Hello. So glad someone else finally caught on. And where are they?
People should listen to you. I don't understand why people don't listen to you more.
And where are they?
Well, let's tell the folks what we're talking about before we say where are they. They were talking about are the Hollywood stars that all the time get accept awards and say that they owe all of their fame, fortune, and good fortune to their base, their training on the stage, that they love the stage. They have a great love for the stage. And indeed, superstars will go and do star turns on Broadway to show their theater cred because that's important to them. But none of them has stood up and said that for the past year to talk about the importance of the arts community. And some of the things that I want to just highlight here from this. First of all, I want to say that it's written in as a letter to an unnamed person. And I love the writing style is fun. So if you
the writing style, and I think that's how I would have written an article too. I like it. It just, it's uninhibited and it makes you think differently, I think, when you're writing. So it gets out the things in a,
And it's a fun read. So it's not like the old gray lady and her staid kinds of thing. I want to read just one paragraph. This is the second paragraph. And again, this is by Lauren Collins Hughes. Quote, "It was comforting to think of you out there in the Klieg-light glare of screen celebrity as someone who loved the footlights with a kind of tenderness, the way we do things we cherish the most. And theater, the people of theater, the people who built their livelihoods telling us stories in the dark could really, really use some public cherishing now." And then she goes on with this to really throw out a lot of really important facts. And I'm just going to read selected paragraphs. I'm just going to keep going. So later on, she says, quote, This swaggering cowboy nation of ours has always had trouble thinking of employment in arts and culture, which in 2017 contributed $877.8 billion to gross domestic product, more than construction or architecture, as real work rather than some extravagant self-indulgence. Toward theater in particular, there's an entrenched macho bias bound up in misogyny and homophobia that makes it hard for the industry to be taken seriously as the economic force it is. Broadway production alone grossed $1.83 billion in the 2018-2019 season. And they go on to talk about how theater is looked on as kind of elitist, a rich man's sport, if you will. And then she says, yeah, but, you know, we don't penalize doormen that open doors to rich people at big hotels because they work for big rich people. We don't penalize limo drivers because they drive around rich people, but we do penalize wardrobe workers and dressers and ushers because they work in this industry that is considered elitist. So it's just a really wonderful, wonderful article. And one of the things that she's suggesting, which I really like this, that why don't these very well-known, wealthy television and film stars offer their services to the nearest regional theater to come in and do a two-week stint at their theater? Can you imagine what that would be like?
I know.
Let's go to our first guest, and it's Austin Shakespeare. They're doing a Zoom performance of Henry IV, Part 1 and Part 2, directed by Ann Ciccolella. Part 1 and Part 2 is by Paul Parente. We had a lovely conversation. Unfortunately, you weren't there. Here we go. Let's listen to this interview. Hello, everybody. I'm here alone in the Zoom machine today. Nicole is not here. She is busy off doing other things with people across the pond. But it's her loss because I am here. I am lucky enough to be here with some folks from Austin Shakespeare and their upcoming production of Henry IV, Parts 1 and 2, which together make Henry IV, Part 3. I don't know. But we're fortunate enough to have both directors, one of which is Ann Ciccolella, who is also the artistic director of Austin Shakespeare. Hi, Ann. Oh, and I should say she's also the official co-host of Offstage and On the Air. Welcome back to the show, Ann.
Love being here. Thanks so much for having us on.
And we have the director of Henry IV, Part 2, all the way from the great state of Pennsylvania, where they make pencils. Paul Parente. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. And we have two of the performers here. We have Tom Green. Hi, Tom.
Hello, Lisa.
And Justin Scalise. Welcome back, Justin.
Thank you.
Ann Ciccolella, tell us about this project.
Well, it is a Zoom reading of which we've done others before, but nothing as big as this. So Henry IV, Part 1 is a play on its own. And Henry IV, Part 2 is a play on its own. So we're actually doing two plays. This was an idea from our managing director, the witty Alex Alford.
Lovely and witty Alex Alford.
Why just do Part 1? Okay, well, I thought that's a big project. And so Paul and I actually worked on a one-man Henry V at the Philadelphia Fringe Festival. Now, is it 2 years ago? I mean, the Zoom year feels like a joke.
Yeah, it'll be 2 years in the fall.
Oh, I see, a year and a half, really. So I had Paul in my head because, you know, he's a history guy, he's an acting guy. So I was thrilled when he said he would be interested in directing Part 2. So that is what we're doing. And we have the two key actors in each of those shows. That is, Tom Green is playing King Henry IV.
Wow.
And Justin Scalise is playing Prince Hal or Prince Henry. There's a lot of Henrys in this play. But we're really thrilled. The whole cast is actually stunning. I mean, they're really doing a fabulous job. And there are some women in it. People are always asking me, are the women in the show? There are two women and they play two women, but they also play some guys.
So are they, is everybody, are they, are you splitting actors between the two of you?
Same 12 actors.
Same 12 actors.
Show. Kind of like how Shakespeare would have done, we think.
That's a lot of work. And so these are going to be done like one after another. So if I see them both on the same night?
No, because they're chewy, you know. Yeah. So they're about 2 hours each. So on March 28, we do part one. Is that right? And 29, we do part two. And then we play. Say it again.
I think it's 27, 28, isn't it?
See, this is how we are on the Zoom world.
Well, I happen to have the website up right now. And part one is Saturday, March 27th at 7 p.m. Central Time. And part two is Sunday, March 28th at 5 p.m. Central Time, according to the website.
On Sunday. Website is right. And the next weekend, we'll play a recording of those two on Friday and Saturday, because that Sunday is Easter. So I think that's April 2 and 3. But we also will have some talkbacks with the actors, which is kind of a feature we really always enjoy. So so that's basically the profile.
So Paul, tell me about, a lot of times we conceptualize Shakespeare. We place him in different time zones or different places. What's the conception of this? And with two directors, are you sharing a conception? So are we going to see the same thing but different in terms of how we lay things out?
Well, I think you're going to see the same thing. As far as concept, I think Anne and I are on the same page, even without speaking, that the language and the story and the characters are the concept. And I know my goal, because I'm going to have a rehearsal right after this, is to make all of that as clear as possible. And if we can do that, I think, especially in a Zoom reading, we'll pull the audience in. If you're not clear with that stuff, it doesn't really matter what your concept is. You're not going to be successful. So I think it's like the sports team. We're going to go to the basics, 3 yards and a cloud of dust.
We love sports metaphors here on Offstage and on the Air.
You're welcome.
So Tom Green, you play the king, the titular king in this.
Yes.
Tell us about him.
It's a dream role, really. In the history plays, the one that comes before this, Richard II, my character, Bolingbroke, comes back from exile and takes over the throne and has the former king murdered in the Tower of London. So I've come to this crown badly through regicide. And that fact, I think, makes Henry IV, my character, truly tragic and eaten up inside. And then indeed he dies in part two.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
And okay, now you used a word that I think you said regicide.
Yeah.
And I get from its context what it means, and actually from the word, but I've never heard it, so you've taught me another word.
There you go.
Let me say, in this play, they talk about the king who was murdered, Richard II, in very laudatory terms. I mean, brought up JFK the other day. So he's saintly and so on. So Bolingbroke, King Henry IV, comes across as more of an aggressor, if you will. But at this point, he's portrayed as old and sickly. So he's really, it comes right after, as Tom said. But Tom is doing a truly amazing job. We do have some lines for you, Lisa. You know how
I like to. Well, before we get to the, let's get to Tom's lines right now. And then we'll talk to Justin and hear his lines.
Well, they're in a scene together, Lisa.
Oh, yeah. Then never mind. Let's talk to Justin first. Hi, Justin.
Hi, I'm Lisa.
Tell us about the dude you play.
So Prince Hal, the son to King Henry IV, in fact, the first son, so he is in line for the throne. In fact, he does succeed to the throne and becomes King Henry V, and also a very famous Shakespeare play, and in history itself. But in these two plays of Henry IV, parts one and two, he has a very interesting arc and journey in that he starts out not very princely, not very kingly, in that he's kind of a ne'er-do-well, rascally, you know, hangs out with the thieves and the just on the sort of on the wrong side of town, this is obviously the big conflict between between he and his father.
You're the bad boy.
Yeah, Falstaff, who couldn't be with us this morning, but is Ev Lunning, and he is just a crazy Falstaff. First, he asked me, could he wear a fez? And I said, yes. And then he said, and in the battle, I'd like to have a pot on my head. And I said, yes.
So, okay, well, this is piquing my interest right there.
That's going to be a concept.
A fez in a pot. So, Justin, you play the prince. I was gonna make a Harry and what's her name joke, but then decided against it. It's not
Harry,
it's
and
not,
Sally.
Harry and Meghan.
Oh, Harry. And
it's okay. Seems to be top of mind. So I hear from the rumor mill that you have a little scene you want to do here. Could somebody set it up for us, and then we can just jump into it.
Guys, why don't you tell us where you're at this moment, because it's early.
Yeah, this is a scene between father and son, and Henry has come back to see me, or Hal has come back to see me at my command.
At your command. Okay, great. So let's hear the scene with Justin Scalise and Tom Green.
Now, by my scepter and my soul to boot, he hath more worthy interest to the state than thou the shadow of succession. Thrice hath this Hotspur, Mars in swaddling clothes, this infant warrior in his enterprises, discomfited great Douglas, ta'en him once, enlarged him, and made a friend of him to fill the mouth of deep defiance up and shake the peace and safety of our throne. But wherefore do I tell these news to thee? Why, Harry, do I tell thee of my foes, which art my nearest and dearest enemy? Thou that art like enough, through vassal fear, base inclination, and the start of spleen, to fight against me under Percy's pay, to dog his heels and curtsy at his frowns, to show how much thou art degenerate.
Do not think so. You shall not find it so. And God forgive them that so much have swayed your majesty's good thoughts away from me. I will redeem all this on Percy's head. For every honor sitting on his helm, would they were multitudes, and on my head my shame's redoubled. For the time will come that I shall make this northern youth exchange his glorious deeds for my indignities. Percy is but my factor, good my lord, to engross up glorious deeds on my behalf, and I will call him to so strict account that he shall render every glory up, yea, even the slightest worship of his time, or I will tear the reckoning from his heart. This, in the name of God, I promise here.
What a father and son.
Yeah, indeed.
And it's so apropos, I was listening to Harry Chapin earlier today. And there you go. So we are completely out of time. Where can folks get information about this piece?
www.austinshakespeare.org, right where you went, Lisa, to get the right dates. We start on the 27th.
I'm just looking at it right there, and they can get a lineup of all the other wonderful cast members, including Ev Lunning, playing Falstaff. And that would be, that's such a fun role. Well, thank you guys for coming on Offstage and on the Air in our COVID edition.
Excellent. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Henry IV.
Sorry, I missed that.
Uno and due. All right, real quick before we go to break, I'm assuming that you saw that Stephen Sondheim made the big pronouncement that he's fully vaccinated.
Yes.
Well, he did that during the Assassins reunion. Did you happen to see any of that? It's the 30th anniversary of Assassins. You can
yes, I can still see it.
You can go to offstageonair.com and click on the link that says Sondheim vaccinated dash Assassins. And in that article is a link to the Zoom. It's a 3-hour reunion. It had the entire original Playwrights Horizons company along with all the, you know, Sondheim, Weidman, everybody in part of it. So I saw little pieces of it, not the whole thing.
I love that show.
Me too. So speaking of that, let's go to break. With the Ballad of Czolgosz from Assassins with Neil Patrick Harris.
Czolgosz, working man, born in the middle of Michigan. Woke with a thought and away he ran.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps.
And Nicole Shiro.
Shiro, the first.
Shiro, that.
This show, as we have been doing during the pandemic, is pre-recorded, so don't think that we're doing it right now. We're recording this on Monday. It is for you Wednesday, St. Patrick's Day.
Top of the morning to ya.
Top of the morning.
I'm wearing my Harrigan's Pub, my favorite pub in New Jersey. Oh, there it's you a go. Pub. Mm.
So I want to... We don't get many letters, and I wish we got more, but I got an email from a listener who heeded my call to say that I would answer the phone at our membership drive.
Yeah.
And I forgot to go in, so I did not answer the call. I wasn't there, and she called, and she was upset. And I should say now, I should have said this at the top of the show, thank you for everybody who became members of Co-op and gave money to Co-op during our membership drive. It was so important. So this is a email sent to me, and I will apologize in advance for absolutely butchering your last name. Rebecca Kyrakatis. And I am sure that's 100% wrong. But here it is. Hi, I was sorry not to talk with you when I made my donation today, but the show was great. I always get something new to think about and try to watch. During this year of COVID, I have been obsessed with Steven Spinella, best known as part of the original Prior Walter Angels in America. He has been in a gazillion things. One of them was Cradle Will Rock, a film centered on the Federal Theater Project. A lot of amazing actors. Vanessa Redgrave, Susan Sarandon, Hank Azaria, Bill Murray, Cherry Jones, and Mr. Spinella. I recommend it. Thanks again for the great show, and I hope to visit Ground Floor Theater again when it opens. So first of all, what a wonderful note that was. And second, and more important, she reminded me, and I will make one correction for you. It's rare that I know things that my listeners don't, and I only know things because I read up on it based on your letter. The movie is called Cradle Will Rock, not The Cradle Will Rock. The show is called The Cradle Will Rock. This is the Tim Robbins movie that was in 1999 that I had thought that I had seen, but I had not. And I rewatched it yesterday. And what an amazing movie this is. First of all, you know, Tim Robbins wrote and directed it, and I think he did a really good job. And I'm sorry it didn't get as it did well, but not super duper great. But I want to go over some of these star lists.
I'm just still on Steven Spinella. I love him. So I'm on the same page as our reader. He's also in Connie and Carla, one of my favorite movies. I love. Hello.
Cool. So other actors, Bob Balaban, Jack Black, Ruben Blades, who plays Diego Rivera, is amazing. Joan and John Cusack. Joan Cusack did a great job in this. John,
so talented.
She did. Carrie Elwes, of The Princess Bride, played John Houseman.
Yeah.
Paul Giamatti, Cherry Jones, as we said, Bill Murray. Oh my God, he plays this sad clown of a person is just amazing. Vanessa Redgrave, Susan Sarandon, as you said, John Turturro, Emily Watson played Olive Stanton. And so this movie is a combination of the story of The Cradle Will Rock, which we have talked about several times on this show. To remind folks, it's a Federal Theater Project show that was shut down by our lovely government as part of the House Un-Americans Committee. And they surrounded the theater, they chained it shut, and all the theaters walked 20 some odd blocks up to Columbus Circle to a different theater where the composer, Mark Blitzstein, sat on stage at the piano. And he only did this because he wasn't part of the musicians' unions, because all the unions said the performers could not do the show. And the actors, one by one, unbeknownst to anybody, it was going to be just Blitzstein playing a piano on stage, but the actors got up from the audience and started performing the show. And it was amazing. This, of course, we should say was...
The Rock says, stick it to the man.
Yep. And it was directed... why am I losing his name? Who did... Orson Welles. It was directed by Orson Welles and produced by John Houseman. And so it got shut down permanently. And then John Houseman and Orson Welles started another company, and they brought it in, and they kept, they didn't do the original staging. They kept the staging in the house because it really brought the people in, and it was a people show.
I could see it bringing a totally different, I could understand that. That's interesting.
But this movie is just,
Rebecca wrote about this to you.
Oh, me too. And I thank her so much for, I'm surprised I thought I had seen the movie, but I had not, because I was just, my jaw was on the floor. So not only does it tell the story of that, but it tells the story of of the House Un-Americans Committee. And it's got this great storyline that involves Diego Rivera and Frida Kahlo. The production of the mural, I'm going to totally forget what the mural is called, that was supposed to be set at Rockefeller Center, he put in a picture of Stalin in it, and he refused to take it out, so they ended up destroying the fresco.
When Stalin and all your frescoes?
Well, yeah. But very interesting. So I had to read up on everything. I had to read up on the truth behind that painting, whether it was, and it follows the storyline is almost as true to history as it was. But I recommend folks watch Cradle with Will Rock. It is available on, I believe I saw it on Netflix.
I was like, nope, Prime.
I had to rent it on Prime. It's rentable on Prime, but well worth the rental. So Rebecca, thank you. Thank you for being a listener. And if you want to write me, look at how much time. We've just spent 10 minutes talking about one particular awesome, amazing listener.
I love that. She brought up Steven Spinella. That made my day right there.
Yep. So I want to play something for you.
A little ditty?
I'm going to play a little ditty for you. You ready?
Yep.
Here it is. Okay, do you know what that was?
Japanese, and why do I know what it is and I can't think of the song?
I'll give you a hint. No, I won't. I'm just going to tell you. It's the newly opened Japanese language production of Waitress.
It was Waitress. I'm like, it sounded like Sarah Bareilles. I almost said Jagged, like it was Jagged Little Pill Waitressy. Okay.
No,
I freaking love it. That,
yep.
Hi.
So it just... Yes. So it just opened, and they're playing to live audiences in Japan. And they, you know, waitress has always said, where there's a whisk, there's a way. And they found a way to do it.
Japan has been doing shows quite well for a while now. So this isn't the first show.
Here's a picture of it.
Oh my God, I love it.
So it is a YouTube, and I have a link to it on our website, offstageonair.com. You can see that YouTube, and you can not only hear them, but you can watch them as well. In the beginning, the first song sounds like it's English played backwards. It's weird. The first song on that video, I said, that sounds like English played backwards, but it isn't.
Some Japanese words do sound like that. I could understand that.
Another good thing that is happening beginning March 18th, and I'm very, very excited about this. Broadway HD is going to play Allegiance. And I'm looking so forward to it because I want to see it. On the face of it, it sounds like something perfect for ground floor theater. But until I see it, until I fall in love with it, I don't know. It got mixed reviews. But I'm really looking forward to seeing that. To remind folks, it was written by George Takei, guest of this show. And
once of our guests, and starred Miss Leah Salonga.
Leah Salonga. And you know who else is in it that I forgot? Is Wanatabi. What's his name? Wanatabi.
Ken.
Yeah. Also, Telly Leone. Oh, you know what? I don't think it was Ken Wanatabi.
That Wanatabi, he is a handsome, handsome devil.
He is indeed. But I need to just double check because for some reason, no, it's Greg Wanatabi. That's what I, so it's somebody else. Ken Wanatabi, by the way, folks, is from King and I. That happened, what, like 5 seasons ago, 4 seasons ago, 8 seasons ago, who knows?
Was that right?
Finally, before we get to our last interview, we've got so much to talk about, and we had 2 interviews today. The Grammys were last night for us, Sunday night, and the best Broadway soundtrack was your favorite, Jagged Little Pill, and they were up against, and the list kind of surprised me because anyway, they were up against Amelie for London, the West End, American Utopia, Little Shop of Horrors, the new off-Broadway version, The Prince of Egypt, and Soft Power.
I'm going to be honest with you. I'm surprised that Little Shop or American Utopia didn't win. I was like, really? Jagged Little Pill? But okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I have to agree with you, especially because of the Grammys. I loved American Utopia. I wouldn't put it at the top of my list as the top Broadway thing, just because I don't. But in terms of the Grammys, yeah, dang,
yeah, for
burn.
Last album, yeah, it just
and it was pretty amazing. So, but anyway. Jagged Little Pill, and we'll go out after our final
eclectic group of nominees.
True, true. Anyway, let's listen to our second interview today. Georgetown Palace Theater, which has had in-person theater for a while, is opening up almost Maine, and it is let them tell you what it is. Shall we listen to it?
Let's do it.
Here it is. Hi, Nicole, here we are in the Zoom machine.
I know.
It's cold in here. It's like snowpocalypse in the Zoom machine.
That's why I have on my little sweatshirt here. I'm warm, toasty.
And that's why I'm wearing my mukluks.
There you go.
But let's head up to Maine, shall we?
Let's do it.
Let's open the door and see where we land in the big state of Maine.
Okay.
Oh, we're not in Maine. We're in almost Maine.
We are.
And with our friends at Georgetown Palace Theater that is doing a production of Almost Maine. Here joining us, we have Emily Taylor, the director. Hi, Emily.
Hello.
And we have several of the actors here. We have Meredith Brand. Hello, Meredith.
Hello.
Jake Maspero. Hi, Jake.
Hello.
And Jill Jackson.
Hi.
Willkommen all. So this is a fun play that premiered in Oregon. I'm sure you probably know that. But Emily, tell folks what this play is.
So this play all takes place on a single night in a little township called Almost. It's not really a town because they never got around to getting organized. So they call it Almost. And it's just vignettes of various town folk having either a romantic encounter or reviving their love, or maybe even having a fight over a relationship that's gone stale. And we just get to see this moment in time on this one particular night.
So this is a collection of like mini rom-coms, if you will.
Yep.
To put it in today's parlance.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. So let's just go through and talk to our actors and see who they're playing and what. So do each of, so there's separate vignettes. Mm-hmm. That are they strung together by a narrative, or do we just go from one to the other?
You pretty much just go from one to the other, but you do have characters referencing other characters that you've already seen in the show.
Okay, but no repeat characters.
Just one couple. They start out the show, and then they have a little moment in between the two acts, and then they close out the show.
Ah, let's call it we bookend with a middle.
Like the bookends. Yep.
The bookends. Jill Jackson, what? Tell us about your piece, what you play, and whatever else you want to say.
Yeah, so this show is really fun in that we only have six actors, but we all get to play all different characters, which is really fun. We all get to appear in several different vignettes. So I play several characters. I play Jeanette, I play a waitress, I play Marcy, and I play Gail, and maybe a couple little others.
Awesome. What's really fun. Tell us about your favorite role.
Oh, okay. I really like Jeanette because she is her scene is a very young love couple. They're so wholesome and just adorable, and I love that. And actually, the actor that I get to do that scene with, we also do another scene that's completely different relationship. They're married for a while, they have two kids, and there's just no spark. And so it's really fun to go between those two relationships, very different relationships, with the same actor.
And you are Jeanette, as in Pete and Jeanette.
Yeah.
And you are the said bookends with the middle.
Yes.
Put Jake, it all together, Lisa, full circle.
We run a professional outfit here. Jake, are you?
I know. That's why I'm like, bring it on.
There you go. Jake, are you the Pete by any chance?
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. I'm
okay.
In
well, then we.
The
yeah. Thanks for being on the show.
You're welcome.
Tell us about what you play.
Well, I do share. I'm sorry, I'm pointing this way. This is where she is on my Zoom screen. I do share a scene with Jill, and that is one of my favorite scenes. I play this wholly underestimated, seeming lacking in not necessarily motivation, but just like he just doesn't. He's been mischaracterized in his relationship, and I just like the underdog. I think the scene I like the most is the final scene I'm in. I play this character named Wendell, and he is a complete and total shell of the man he was. He wasn't the town hero, but he was like one of the heroes. He was one of the varsity players. He was one of the big names.
His name is Danny, Jake, not Lindell. That's Danny.
That's like a giveaway. What is wrong with you?
I'm like, wait, you're talking about Jake.
That's the punchline, Meredith. God.
I'm sorry.
Well, we'd like to. It's a good thing we're on Zoom. That way, we don't have to break up any physical fights.
But anyway, he's gone. So he's so far gone. Someone from his past comes back to visit him and doesn't even recognize him. And it's just this. It's this very, very subdued role, and I'm used to playing very loud, very boisterous characters, and it's a very different change for me, and I love it. It's a lot of fun.
Well, good. It's always great as a performer to have a variety of roles to exercise your craft. And so, Meredith, tell me about some of the roles you play and what your favorite is.
It's funny. I'm glad that Jake talked first because I get to fall for him twice. The first scene I'm in, my name is Glory, and I am an out-of-towner coming to see the Northern Lights. So I have a different kind of rhythm than the Almost Mainers. And Jake's character, what's your character in that, Jake? Glory and Eve gets to explain about the town.
The town of Easton, a son of Easton born on this.
Where are we? It's not on the map. and he wants to fix me. And then we also have our final scene together, the one he was just describing, in which I am an out-of-towner again, but we were together at one point a long time ago. So my character comes back to try to amend some things, and we get to see how that works out or does not work out. So he mends my heart and he breaks my heart all in the bookends of the show.
Isn't that the way it always is? Emily, yeah. How do I feel at the end of this as an audience member? So, you know, we're watching these love stories. What's the message you're trying to portray with this piece?
So you kind of get a few messages, but I think the overall message is just one of hope and human connection, especially with the bookends that the Pete and Jeanette couple provide. Their story is just so cute and so wholesome, and it ends really happily with a little cute vignette. And so I'm hoping that it will bring some lightness to anybody that is able to come see the show.
Well, I know that in 2014, there was a production in North Carolina. It was a school production, and it was canceled because of controversy, which is because one of the scenes take place between a couple of gay men. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming you have that scene in here, or yeah, that piece in there.
So the script has actually been amended a couple times. The original script included the scene titled They Fell, between two men realizing that they're in love with each other. And then at some point, the playwright wrote a amended scene that happens between two women. And so now the script, when you license it, it tells you to switch between the two. So every other night, it'll be the two men. Every other night, it'll be the two women. And so you kind of get to see slightly different variations because the scenes do have a couple of differences between them to make them more female specific or male specific. And I think it's a really beautiful scene of realizing, you know, feelings that you may not have wanted to acknowledge between two really close friends.
Oh, that's wonderful. I did not know that.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm glad you asked about that, Lisa.
Well, I'm glad you're glad. So when does this show is actually indoors at the theater. So when does this open?
It opens on March 26th. And it'll be running Friday, Saturdays, and Sunday matinees at the Georgetown Palace Theater. And they do have distanced seating. Masks are required inside. They've upgraded all of their filters and everything for their HVAC system to try to keep everybody as safe as they possibly can.
Okay. And I'm assuming there's touchless. Everything's touchless. And that there is no concessions.
No concessions. Lots of options for sanitizing. Everything gets wiped down after every performance.
I do know that our governor here in the state of Texas has said that we can open up at 100%. It sounds like the Georgetown Palace is not opting to open it. Is not opting to have this piece at 100%. What kind? Do you know what the percentage of space is going to be allotted for audiences?
I think right now they're sitting at about 33% to 50%, sort of depending on the groups that book and trying to keep the space between groups that are booking.
Cool. So you're doing the pod situation. We're making pods. Well, awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on. Tell folks where they can go to get information about this show.
GeorgetownPalace.com. You can find out more information about Almost Maine or any of the other rest of the season or any of their special events that they have coming up.
Great. And I know they're doing a lot of outdoor stuff and movies. And so there's lots of stuff happening up in Georgetown.
It's a smorgasbord.
It's a smorgasbord. It's a bookend of shows. And, you know, Georgetown's such a charming little town with the square there. So you can make a night of it.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, thanks. thank you guys so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Yes.
Okay. Almost Maine. It's not quite Maine. It's almost Maine.
Almost.
Almost. Well, that's it for the show.
Want a lobster roll.
We're going to go out with a song from Jagged Little Pill. Not The Doctor is the song we're going to go out with. And remember, watch Cradle Will Rock.
And should I say, top of the morning to ya. Happy
Top of the morning to all of ya. You can get more information at offstageonair.com. And you can sign up to have us get your offstage and on the air right in your mailbox.
It's the luck of the Irish.
It is. Bye, folks. We'll see you next week when we look at what's happening offstage and on the air.
Oh, my God, I love you.
Yeah, nothing better than a bad Irish accent.
This is a life of extremes.